It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And as you might be able to tell, America's favorite soccer dad is away again, this time in the Orlando area, I believe. Following which, he'll be home for a few weeks, you said, right?
Yeah. My travel stint is coming to an end. I've been really, really busy, looking forward to some more time in Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised about that. It does get a little old, but hey, there are soccer games to be won, right?
I hope so. They're playing right now. I've got a partial view. So far, so good. 0-0. So evenly matched.
Okay. Well, good. Keep us posted if something happens during the course of the hour, and we can send a few cheers down that way.
Anywho. Will do.
All right. I'd like to welcome everybody, especially the regulars. You know, you're the people that keep listening, so we keep doing the show. But if you are new to the show, maybe somebody told you about it, or you just happen to have your radio in the right place at the right time. By the way, that's why I always open the show the same way. I want to get it ingrained in your heads that it's Saturday morning at 10 o'clock, and this is the Van Wee Financial Hour, so that you just automatically don't have to think about it. You tune in, and we're glad you do. And, well, there's a lot happening. Of course, there's always a lot happening. Let's face it, money is a topic that never gets old, and nobody is without being affected by it one way or the other. And, of course, there's always some expected things and a lot more unexpected things, and we can get into any number of those today. But there's a couple features, too. Adam, by popular demand, is bringing back this segment that I call Who Am I? It's the self-made gazillionaire, millionaire at least, life stories, and we get to guess who it might be. So that'll happen before the hour is over. And I have a couple of topics. A couple of weeks ago, Howard and Angela were talking to someone right toward the end of the show about whether you should borrow money to invest in the markets. And I tried for 2 weeks to get a chance to talk about it, and that, as it turned out, they both got very busy. But I'm going to try to get to it today, and I think you'd be very interested in the answer and the reason, more than the answer, the reasons for the answer. And I've got some other things on inflation, including one little thing that I found up this week, which is just a kind of a passing thing. But one of the more or less brilliant heads in Washington, I use that term loosely, Janet Yellen, the head of the Treasury, she was quoted this week in writing saying, "Inflation is transitory, but that doesn't mean it'll go away over the next few months." enough said, I guess. You can't make this stuff up, folks. You just can't. Anyway, we'll also have a trivia question right after the break. But meanwhile, in the markets this week, Monday looked like here we go again after what we've been through. But it didn't turn out that way.
No, it sure didn't. It was a little scary, though, I'll be honest. But that's what they love to do. It's scary, make you get out of the market, and then that's when they swoop in and buy it all up. And who are they? Nobody really knows, but they are very powerful.
There's lots of them with lots of money.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely some choppy trading continued this week. Had a three-day rebound after Monday, though, which was really nice. And then Friday was basically flat, a little bit down towards the close, but that was on a real dud of a jobs report. So I'll take a flat to slightly down day on news that bad, which, you know, these days, though, that type of news can be construed as good or bad, because a bad jobs report means more easy monetary policy, and the Fed is getting ready to start or curb their buying of assets next month, and who knows, that might be up in the air at this point. So
I'll give it better than 50-50 chance that they don't do it.
Yeah, me too. That's what they've stated. I would not be surprised to see that pushed until the first quarter, though.
Right.
It's very much up in the air at this point, I would say.
Yep, me too.
Yep. All three indexes actually ended the week up, and the Dow led the way higher. It gained 1.2%. The S&P tacked on 0.8%, and the NASDAQ eked out a very, very tiny 0.1% gain. All three indexes are also positive for the quarter. S&P's up almost 2%. for the quarter, if you can believe that. It doesn't feel that way, but that is actually the case.
Yep.
I also, energy has led the way higher again, something we've said a lot this year, but not so much in the last 7 or 8 years. It gained over 5% in the last five trading days and added to its almost 50% gain in 2021. Financial services were not too far behind, gained over 3%. These are the only two sectors that are currently overbought. The laggards for the week were healthcare and real estate, which added just 22 basis points and 1.5% respectively. Really not too bad considering those were the two worst performing sectors. So far in October, the places you would have wanted to have your money are Bitcoin, Ethereum, energy, oil, and Russia. Bitcoin was up 25%, Ethereum 23%. Energy's gained 8% in October. Oil's up 5%. Russia's up 5%. The places that were not so kind to your money were natural gas, down 4%, Japan down 3%, and long treasuries, down 1.5%. The long bond market right now is not so good. The interest rates have been climbing. The yield on the 10-year treasury went from about 1.46% to over 1.6% in just a matter of a week. So that's a pretty steep climb on that particular area.
Which, of course, is inversely related to the price of those bonds. So if you're holding them, you're going to see some degradation.
The only area that has shown any strength in bonds has been TIPS. They're up about 37 basis points in October. So if you're banking on inflation, that would have been a good place to have your money so far this month.
Yeah, the payment was only about half of what it was a month before, but the month before it was a 10-year high. So you got to be careful how you describe things. It's still a nice return on your money this year in TIPS.
So if you feel like it's been costing you more to fill up at the pump these days, you would be correct. The price of crude oil hit $80 a barrel this week for the first time since the Obama era, and the average price of gasoline hit a new high at $3.26. That's up 42.9% from the start of the year compared to a normal year, typically sees about a 14% gain between the beginning of the year and this time of year. There were only 2 years that were larger, and they were 2005 and 2009.
But the administration jumped on it. Remember that. It's not like they're sitting back and letting it happen. They got on the phone right away and begged OPEC to make more oil. And, of course, were declined. Yeah.
Yeah. The really bad part about all that is that this time of year is when we typically see gas prices start to decline because the summer driving season is over. But that's not the trend this year. It's actually going the other way. So it could get worse is what I'm trying to say, unfortunately. There's been a ton of talk about supply chain constraints since the pandemic hit, and it's been a major headache for manufacturers and retailers around the world. Everything from cargo ships to semiconductors have been in short supply, but is there an end in sight? And I'll wait till after the break to tell you the answer to that question, because it might surprise you.
I'll give you a solid on it right now. Maybe. How's that? Something to chew on.
I have a different answer.
Oh, okay. Well, hopefully it'll be a little less wishy-washy. All right. After the break, I've got a few things to do, starting with the trivia. And, of course, I can do that now. I want to say a very sincere thank you to Christine Kennedy, who was doing the real estate show right before us, who said a series of very nice things. And you know, just because they're all true doesn't mean they're not real nice to hear. Ha. Anyway. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have a trivia question, as usual, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. And you can call us at 904-222-8255. And lines are open. All right. Long-term inflation trivia today. And I've got a short-term inflation story and just all kinds of fun things going on today. Long-term inflation. It was 50 years ago that everybody's favorite mouse became bicoastal on the opening of Disney World in Orlando. Today, for an adult to get into Disney for the day, costs $109. What did it cost then for an adult? That's long-term inflation. All right, we need to get to jobs, Adam, but first, why don't you get into your more interesting points on the longevity, I guess, of this hyperinflationary cycle.
Yeah, well, one of the fallouts, I would call it, from the pandemic and the subsequent shutdowns has been supply chain constraints and just real problems getting materials, getting things produced that are in high demand. A lot of that was because of the shutdowns. A lot of it was because people grossly misestimated what products would be in demand during and after the lockdown. And I don't blame them. Who would have thought that boats and RVs would have been most popular, and housing would be the three areas that really boomed during a global pandemic.
Yeah, I think you and I both admit we blew it as badly as everybody else. It just doesn't matter so much to us.
Yeah, I definitely did not see that coming. I mean, that would have been a really, whoever got that right, good for you.
No kidding.
The fact is that those supply chain problems are still persisting to this day, and two of the areas that we're really seeing it in are cargo ship availability and semiconductors. And those two areas in particular, there is some potential relief in sight. And it's not going to happen right away, but we are already seeing some of the prices back down. In fact, the spot price for shipping a container from China to the U.S. mainland has been cut in half just since September. So some of those crazy prices we've been seeing recently are coming back to earth. We saw a similar thing with lumber at the beginning of the year. And sometimes when there's just a real, real supply crunch, prices shoot up, that actually eases the crunch and it lets go. But the good news is that companies are doing more to relieve that than just letting the market take care of it. There are actually more cargo ships on order than there have been since 2011. So realizing this global need to move goods across the ocean, companies are ordering ships like crazy. The semiconductor industry has announced major new capital investments in production over the last year. Those plants take a little while to build, but help is definitely on the way. Once we do reach capacity, you will definitely see the supply crunches in those two areas go away. And you might even see some price competition that will bring things back down to normal. So I think that's pretty good news. It's just going to take a while to work itself out. And so in the meantime, just kind of bear with it and hope you don't get in an accident and have to buy a new car or a used car right now because they're really expensive.
Yeah, that kind of thing will come down. But in the long run, you know that a lot of the price level that we're at now is embedded forever. They build these new factories. It'll be things like the labor will not come down. There'll be more automation, however. So there's some room to give. But you're going to be paying more for a lot of things for a long time. Maybe not increasingly more.
It really depends what you're looking at. Some prices stick, some don't. Yep. If you look at Teslas, I think are a great example. They are selling 30% more cars this year than they did last year. That's more than any other manufacturer. And they actually
more growth than any other manufacturer.
Yeah, sorry, not more cars.
They're
more growth,
14th largest in the world right now.
They actually purposely made a cheaper car. So they went from the original $90,000 Tesla down to one that could be consumed by the masses on purpose to broaden their audience. So sometimes things come down in price by introducing a cheaper, better version of the previous one. So that's another way that prices can come down over time. It typically happens a lot in electronics, but in the car industry, that happens as well.
Yeah, in fact, if you go back about 25, 30 years, as some of us do, nobody could afford a BMW or a Mercedes. And now look at them. Right. They're everywhere because they started building a different type of car for the masses, and they competed very well doing what those companies do so well, which is competing by quality. Not to mention fun.
And they really are everywhere. And I think that the expanding financing options out a few more years, because cars can last 7 years now. It's not unusual for that to happen. So expanding the financing makes it more affordable on a monthly basis. Now, that's not always the best idea to take a loan like that, but it does open up more expensive products to a greater variety of people.
It's always about supply and demand. The market works when the market is left alone to work. That's why there are ships being built. That's why there are factories being built, and on and on and on. You let it happen, it will happen. Nature abhors a vacuum, you know.
It is true.
Or as Senator Kennedy said the other day, nature abhors a moron. And I'm not going to tell anybody who he was talking about because I don't need to.
We have to talk about the jobs reports, and they were really, really divergent this month. That happens every once in a while, but ADP came out on Wednesday, and it looked really good. Do you have that number? I don't have
568.
It with me. Yeah, so 568. That's really solid. I knew it was in the mid-500s. And so that's usually sort of a bellwether for the government report. And the government report, ironically, the prediction for it was right around 500,000. And then Friday came, and it was a giant dud. It came out at 194,000, less than half of what was expected. And the good news was the unemployment rate dropped to 4.8% from 5.2%. That's the first time we've seen a 4 in front of that number since the pandemic. So I guess that's good news, but...
Well, the way it got there isn't good news.
No, it's not. The participation rate is not climbing like it should with this robust job market.
Went down.
It's a really, really tough jobs market to read right now. It feels a lot like people just don't want to work. Whether or not that's true, I don't know, but that's certainly what the numbers look like.
183,000, I guess, people actually left the workforce staring in the face of 11.8 million open jobs. Now, what's up with that?
Have we
finally dumbed our population down and made life so easy for them that they don't need to work, therefore they won't? Or what's going on? I do not know. I missed, although there's some explanations too, but I missed it. I thought this would be a big one too because of the end of that extra $600 payment. But if you look at the household survey, it was up, and it was up big at 526,000. So that more mirrors the ADP report. And one of the big job loss characteristics or segments, I guess, of the society was public education employees. How's that for interesting? Can't really blame too many people for getting kids out of there.
There were a few areas that sort of stood out in the report. The largest increase was for leisure and hospitality. That was 74,000. So that's an area that's been consistently growing as the world reopens. Professional and business services was up 60,000. Retail added 56,000. So there was some good news, but more good news. Government declined 123,000. I just hope that's not all teachers.
Yeah, no kidding. I have a funny feeling they're packed in there.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's because of the new vaccine mandate or why government declined so much, but that's an interesting number.
Well, that real cute lady from Jacksonville has been on the news the last couple of nights. Has her way, it'll be because people are taking their kids out of public schools into the alternatives, private education, homeschooling, and all that. She's really making a splash out there, and I say, you go, girl. Do it.
I haven't seen that story.
Well, it's a movement that is absolutely an equal and opposite reaction to all the junk that's going on. But you know, we're not here to discuss that so much as the fact that there are jobs, almost 12 million jobs available, and nobody can find anybody to go to work, which results in higher wages, which results in inflation. So it seems to be an ornery cycle that we're in right now, and I don't see how it's going to change very much very soon. So time will tell, I guess.
I really don't know.
Okay. I have an announcement for people like me that really, this could change your lives, folks. I'm telling you, it's big. Rolls-Royce is putting out an all-electric car. The new Spectre coming out in 2024. Now, is that not exciting? Because if there's one thing most of us can't handle, it's the price of the gasoline to go into your Rolls Royce. So,
are you on the waiting list? Do you have your deposit down?
Yeah, I haven't just yet, but those 12-cylinder engines just take up way, way, way too much gasoline for my good. So I'm definitely, if I ever get a Rolls, you can bet it'll be an electric one. I just thought everybody'd like to know, because, hey, the reason you're all listening to this program is because you got so much money, right? Or maybe not. Don't know. Anyway, I thought that was just kind of funny. They jumping into the game a little on the late side. They'll get there. All right. Then we've got some real interesting stories to tell for right after the break, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And as we noted earlier, Adam is playing soccer dad down in Orlando this week, but calling in sounded pretty normal to me. I hope it's that good everywhere. All right, I remind everybody, lines are open, 904-222-8255, and the trivia question is still out there. Disney World today for an adult costs $109, and I want to know what it cost 50 years ago when it first opened its doors, and then I've had an alert caller come in and ask also what was an e-ticket back then, and I don't have a clue on that one, so anybody knows a lot about Disney, let me know. Meanwhile, good morning, Bob.
Good morning, guys.
What's happening?
Hey, Adam is 100% right. We're at a very famous restaurant, which I will not name. It's in Live Oak, and only half of it is open because they can't find waitresses.
Oh, boy.
Wow. That's crazy. Adam is 100% right. People do not want to work. The other thing that I wanted to ask you guys is, I've received calls from family members about this bill that's trying to be pushed through. And if there's a source or an area where we could read up on that to see exactly what's going on, that would be fantastic. If you have a...
You're talking about the reconciliation bill, the 3.5, supposedly?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. That would be fantastic if you have something. I'm going to turn this in real quick.
Okay. Not off the top of my head, Senate.gov is sometimes a source of some pretty good stuff.
That's in the parking lot. Okay.
And I also, I also know that there are people listening right now who are way more attuned to those things, and I can ask them now if they'd send it to us, and we'll give it out on the air, post it on the website, or both. Or you can email us to it, info@vanweefinancial.com.
Okay, good. My youngest called me, and he said, you're going to be dead. You're going to be paying $2,000 in taxes alone just to drive a car that requires gas. So I'm like, okay, I got to find out what's going on in this bill in case they get it through.
So. Yeah, and there's an unfortunate probability that some version of it will go through. If they need to do some window dressing, it'll be on the price tag, and all they're going to have to do there is they just cut the duration down and still implement all the stupid programs that are going to kill us. So we've got to be diligent. Also, I noticed that Governor Ducey has sworn on his personal stack of Bibles that Senator Sinema will cave. That's not something I wanted to hear either.
Uh-uh. No, that's not good. True. And McConnell's and 11 other people have already caved in order to.
Right.
I'm sure they put the gun to their head, said, "Well, we're going to get rid of reconciliation process."
Get rid of the filibuster.
The filibuster.
Right.
If you don't do this.
Yeah. And unfortunately, the reason this is important to all of us is this is going to impact our money, our money, our taxes, our freedoms, and everything. And that's where I, of course, have to draw the line.
Yeah, exactly. Me too. Anyhow, I'll take a quick swag at the Disney thing. I'd say it was $11.
All right.
And I'll hang up and listen.
Well, you've bracketed it nicely, but you're too high.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Bye.
Good morning, Phil.
Good morning to Van Wees, gurus of the world. Phil here, live from the boatyard on the Ortega River.
Love it.
I'm going to say, I think... I didn't get the whole, but I think it's about the Disney's first ticket 50 uh-huh. years ago, something like that.
Yes.
I want to say I heard it earlier in the week, but I forgot it because I have 10% dementia. I'm going to guess $3, maybe $4.
You want to pick one or the other?
Three.
Or somewhere in between?
I'll go with three. And I'm probably wrong.
Well, you're a little bit light because you're outside of the parameters, but you have certainly put a bracket in it between 3 and 11. So anybody listening now, you got a much better idea. But great guess. We appreciate it. And it does give you some idea of the magnitude of inflation and how it really matters over time.
My dad was director of facilities and engineering for Madison Square Gulf Western Corporation. And my uncle was a chairman of the board. And my other uncle was from the other side of the family, was the treasurer. Well, yeah. Guess what? They went out to Disney, California, and Oakland Stadium, I want to say probably early 70s. Maybe mid-70s,
mm-hmm.
And this is well before the long story short, well before the big anything in Florida. And, oh, my gosh, they were able, but they had to sign a confidentiality statement. They actually met with Disney and his team, like you and your brother would be, and I mean that politely because you are top caliber. That's why I called in, and I listen no matter where I am in the world. And, oh, my gosh. They were talking shop when they came back at the other boatyard up in the New York Harbor area. And I was home on leave. And they said, no, you can listen. I said, you sure you want me to listen? He said, you have a top secret clearance in the Air Force. You're okay. They said the money that he already had, cash assets, was ungodly back then. He was a smart cookie, and I'm going to run with that. I'm going to say the lady that answered the phone second Saturday in the raise, in the row, if you can't give a raise, let me know. I'll send you a trust check to do it. Okay. Keep up the good work, guys.
You've got our undivided attention.
Your financial is 5-star, excuse me, but your knack, your outstanding professionalism, apt, and entities of previous experience in life is just 5.5-star. And this old Air Force high-ranking individual salutes you with both hands. God bless you guys.
We appreciate it. Thank you very much. And I think we might have okay. That's it for now. All right, anybody, you know, it's $3 to $11. What the original price of a Disney thing? And my alert listener says, in the old days, 50s through 70s, maybe the 80s, Disney used to sell tickets to get in, but then they'd sell them for each ride. The e-tickets were for the most popular rides, so it became an icon for top tier items. So you paid admission plus bought ticket books, and the e-tickets back then were 90 cents for the ride. Very interesting. Thanks to Lynn and Pat, who are always, shall we say, just keeping us up to date. All right. Adam, have we wrapped up enough on the market for your taste?
Yeah, that was what I had. The only other note that I had was bullish sentiment dropped again, which is okay. Great news.
Yeah, that was the one thing I wanted to come in at, too, and way down.
Yeah, and it had already gone way down,
yep.
And it went way down again.
Yep, so. And for all those who don't know, it is a very contrarian measurement. So the lower the bullish sentiment, the happier Adam and I are. All right, we have Good Morning, Leroy.
Good morning, gents. How are you doing today?
We're great. How are you?
Good. I just figured I'd make a stab at the trivia.
Shoot.
I go for an even 5.
5's too high, but now look at that bracket. 3 to 5.
Wow.
It just tells you what happens over time when it marches on slowly, doesn't it?
Holy cow.
Yeah, I agree. I want to go back and take a visit down there, but I want to do it 50 years ago.
Yeah, I hear you. I don't know. I don't know if I had that much money then.
Yeah, I hear you there, too. Believe me. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
All right, you guys have a great day.
Bye.
Bye.
Mike.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
How are you?
Hanging in there, just trying to wrap my head around two things. The debt ceiling, which I'll never understand, and Stephanie Kelton's definition of modern monetary policy, or whatever it's called, theory.
Which you'll never understand either.
Yeah.
Yep. there's no understanding something that is total nonsense. That's the way I look at it.
I can sum it up pretty quickly. Money doesn't really matter, so let's spend it all.
Exactly. Whether we have it or not.
Hey, could I give a quick trivial answer?
Please do. We got a few seconds, sir.
I'm going to go with $3.50.
And you're going to go away a winner. How about that? In fact, they had the range at 340 to 360, but you nailed it right on the actual number. It was $3.50 at plus 90 cents if you wanted one of the big attraction rides, apparently. 350 is it. I'm going to put you on hold, and Lauren will get your name and address and all that stuff, and we will talk to you next week, I hope. Take care. All right. 350. Not bad. We have got to take a break here, and then I want to come back, and I want to talk about whether or not it's a good idea to borrow money to invest it. But also, I'm going to have Adam go through a little who is it. So don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are in the last segment where we hope to accomplish a couple things. But first one is, who's living the American dream after a slow start?
Oh, are you talking about my segment? Okay.
I am.
Yeah. So I've been, as you, some of our regular listeners know, I've been, did a series earlier this year about people that realize the American dream. And it was brought on because basically we had a caller that said it really wasn't possible, that rich people had all the money, there's no upward mobility. But I don't believe that's true. And I think that the series has really proven that. I've done 12 prior to this, so I had a couple of requests to keep doing it. I guess it was fairly popular, and I did a 13th, and I may keep going if this goes well.
So, it's an optimistic segment, and I think everybody enjoys that optimism. You don't hear enough of it these days.
That's right. I like doing these actually gives me a lot of pride in the ability of America to create millionaires, because it happens more often than what you might think. So this man was born in North Hollywood in Los Angeles, and it's not really surprising, but he ended up in show business. He didn't have rich or famous parents that pushed him that way. He spent his early years very poor, always hungry, moving around frequently, and he talks about it a lot today, about how terrible his childhood was, but he persevered. At age 18, he left his volatile home life to live on his own. He attended L.A. Valley College briefly until he was put on academic probation and then dropped out. All of that happened in one or two semesters. He then worked construction as a carpet cleaner, a closet installer, a boxing instructor, and as a traffic school instructor. So a series of just menial odd jobs that he wasn't really into, and that's his own words. He began his acting career by joining an improv group in the early 1990s, but his real break came when he volunteered to help prepare Jimmy Kimmel, then known as Jimmy the Sports Guy, on the local L.A. rock station for a staged boxing match. The two became friends and would go on to work together for many years. In 1995, he was signed by an agent and then offered a spot on a local call-in radio show called Loveline. Loveline was co-hosted by Dr. Drew Pinsky and was syndicated nationally. The radio show was then converted to a TV format, which ran from 1996 to 2000. The Loveline gig led to several more TV shows, including The Man Show on Comedy Central, Crank Yankers, and others. Loveline also led to a new radio gig that actually had his name in the title. This new show replaced the Howard Stern show when Howard Stern was picked up by satellite radio in 2005. It aired from 2006 to 2009 in major markets across the U.S. This gave our millionaire the idea to turn his show into a podcast broadcast on his personal website, now known as the ACE Broadcast Network. His first podcast was downloaded 250,000 times in the first 24 hours, and within three episodes, it was the number one downloaded podcast in the U.S. and Canada. In 2009, iTunes nominated the podcast as the best audio podcast of the year. In 2011, the podcast set the record for most downloaded by receiving almost 60 million downloads, unique downloads, between 2009 and 2011. He still has several popular podcasts today, as well as a film production company. He's written several books, appeared in many episodes of popular sitcoms and game shows throughout the years. He's a competitive race car driver and a serious collector of classic cars in his spare time. At an estimated net worth of about $20 million, he isn't the richest celebrity out there, but his background of making it from nothing certainly sets him apart. It may explain his libertarian viewpoint, which obviously makes them very different from most of the woke Hollywood world. From the slums of North Hollywood to the creator of a podcast empire, Adam Carolla has definitely realized the American dream.
Huh. And if you are familiar with him, he is one funny guy.
Yeah, he really is. I listen to him frequently, and he talks about his experience growing up and just really having nothing and how he just rejected all of that and said, I'm not going to live like this anymore. I'm going to break the cycle. And then he did it.
Good for him. I kind of figured that's where you were going. All right, should you borrow money to invest it? Looking around, well, we know a couple of things. We know that mortgage rates are really, really low. We know that in the last year, the average house is up about 19.7%. People got a lot of equity in their homes. They're paying maybe 3% out, 2.9%, 3.5% monthly. And that equity in there is sitting there getting them absolutely no return. So it always comes up when you have a good market and low interest rates. People will inevitably ask, should I borrow money, such as on a HELOC, and put it in the market? Because the market's been returning so much better that we could just pocket the difference. Well, here's some things to think about. One of our first rules is the time that money has to be in the market to potentially do you any good. And we put an absolute lower limit on it of 5 years. If you need it before that, then don't expose it to the market. If you want to know, and some of you do and some of you probably don't, the risk of losing money in any given year is about 37%. In 5 years, that probability of loss shrinks to about 22%, and in 10 years, the risk of loss shrinks only to about 14%. Now, it is critical, while we're on this, to understand that those numbers reflect a theoretically diversified portfolio. A 100% stock portfolio would be even riskier. Now, one time in my 20-plus years in this business, I had somebody do this. And it happened that just as he got into it, the market went into what I would call an elongated pause. It didn't really go up, didn't really go down, but kept paying the interest on the HELOC, and there was really nothing to show for it. So after several months, he kind of walked away with a whimper and closed the account and paid off the HELOC, and that was fine. So naturally, the next day, which is probably in the next couple of months, the market started to take off and went on a very, very lengthy bull run, naturally. But there's not much you can do about that now. So what I have looked at a bunch of kinds of risk that can you have to think about this if you're going to do that. The risk that I just talked about, I've named uncooperative market. It didn't do what it was supposed to during the time it was supposed to do it. Market
and
risk.
When does it?
And what? And when does
and
it?
When does it cooperate?
I guarantee when you least expect it.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's a short-term risk and a medium-term risk and a longer-term risk in the market. Now, for those of you who might be getting scared, the good news is there's never been a 15-year period in which the stock market lost money. So if you do actually have the time, that's a good thing. But if you want to get a little bit scared, there were several periods of time, like 98, 99, 2000. In 99, the market returned -3.8, 2000 -3.4, and I'm talking about 10-year periods now. And in 2001, it lost 0.9%, and 2002 gained 0.4%. So those four 10-year periods, which encompass a calendar 14 years, you would be getting mighty, mighty sick of making payments to a bank and not getting anything to show for it. And you can never do it on a fixed income device because, by definition, those fixed income things are short-term rates, which will be lower, and your longer-term mortgage rates will be higher than that. So then there's real estate risk. And far too often, when things are good like they are now, you get from the general public a feeling like, yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. It only goes up, right? Well, ask anybody, including the one on the other line here, what happens if you buy in 06 or 07, something like that? It doesn't continue going up. So So you have to consider the real estate risk as part of the formula. Then there's one that I call mobility risk. The population today is so mobile that not only is there mobility from place to place, city to city, state to state, and so on, but up and down in housing, too. Now, if you borrow against your house and you want to trade up or move or anything, you have to pay that off. Well, what happens if that comes due at a time when the market isn't doing exactly the right thing? That's called risk. Interest rate risk, the interest rates could go up. So if you're going to borrow, you want to do it at a fixed price, but that fixed price is going to be higher than the variables. And so I guess I would say that the personal question here says, how long are you willing to make payments and not get anything for it? 1, 2, 5 years, whatever. And then, of course, if you want to get a little deeper in the weeds, you've got political risk in D.C. You got credit risk to your own credit score if you borrow. Now, there are a lot of ways you can do this other than that. And every time it's come up in the office, except that one time, I wind up unintentionally talking people out of doing it. Not because I'm against it, because it isn't very practical most of the time. See you next week. This is the Banway Financial Hour.